Chapter 52. Favored with the attendance of the present company, but I don't inquire. When they're quite satisfied, perhaps they'll be so good as to disperse. Whether they're satisfied or not, perhaps they'll be so good as to disperse. I'm not bound to deliver a lecture on my family affairs. I have not undertaken to do it, and I'm not a-going to do it. Therefore, those who expect any explanation, whatever upon that branch of the subject, will be disappointed, particularly Tom Gradgrind, and he can't know it too soon. In reference to the bank robbery, there has been a mistake made concerning my mother. If there hadn't been over-officiousness, it wouldn't have been made, and I hate over-officiousness at all times, whether or no. Good evening. Apostrophe, although Mr. Bounderby carried it off in these terms, holding the door open for the company to depart, there was a blustering sheepishness upon him, at once extremely crestfallen and superlatively absurd. Detected as the bully of humility, who had built his windy reputation upon lies, and in his boastfulness had put the honest truth as far away from him, as if he had advanced the mean claim there is no meaner, to tack himself onto a pedigree, he cut a most ridiculous figure. With the people filing off at the door he held, who he knew would carry what had passed to the whole town, to be given to the four winds, he could not have looked a bully more shorn and forlorn, if he had had his ears cropped. Even that unlucky female, Mrs. Sparsit, fallen from her pinnacle of exultation into the slough of despond, was not in so bad a plight as that remarkable man and self-made humbug, Josiah Bounderby of Coketown. Rachel and Sissy, leaving Mrs. Peegler to occupy a bed at her son's for that night, walked together to the gate of Stone Lodge and there parted. Mr. Gradgrind joined them, before they had gone very far, and spoke with much interest of Stephen Blackpool, for whom he thought this signal failure of the suspicions against Mrs. Peegler was likely to work well. As to the whelp, throughout this scene, as on all other late occasions, he had stuck close to Bounderby. He seemed to feel that, as long as Bounderby could make no discovery without his knowledge, he was so far safe. He never visited his sister, and had only seen her once, since she went home. That is to say, on the night, when he still stuck close to Bounderby, as already related. There was one dim unformed fear lingering about his sister's mind, to which she never gave utterance, which surrounded the graceless and ungrateful boy with a dreadful mystery. The same dark possibility had presented itself in the same shapeless guise, this very day, to Sissy, when Rachel spoke of someone who would be confounded by Stephen's return, having put him out of the way. Louisa had never spoken of harboring any suspicion of her brother in connection with the robbery. She and Sissy had held no confidence on the subject, save in that one interchange of looks, when the unconscious father rested his gray head on his hand. But it was understood between them, and they both knew it. This other fear was so awful, that it hovered about each of them like a ghostly shadow, neither daring to think of its being near herself, far less of its being near the other. And still the forced spirit which the whelp had plucked up, throve with him. If Stephen Blackpool was not the thief, let him show himself. Why didn't he? Another night. Another day and night. No Stephen Blackpool. Where was the man, and why did he not come back? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.